Today's broadcast was originally recorded on May 23rd, 2024.
If he doesn't recuse himself, he is jeopardizing the absolute legitimacy of the Supreme Court.
Legitimacy of the Supreme Court? What legitimacy of the Supreme Court?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. What? I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. Jokers to the right, here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, also in California in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio, I'm mad at Ohio, on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. When I first started covering this story, now well over a month ago, I was not sure at the time if it was even a story worth reporting on because it seemed so ridiculous, so absurd. And now I cannot believe this is still a story, Desi Doyen.
What story is that?
Well, you'll find out because apparently it is still a story.
Yeah.
And a story that has received shockingly little coverage, frankly, from our mainstream corporate media, to be honest. The Republican majority in Ohio's legislature will not pass special legislation to allow President Joe Biden to be on November's general election ballot, according to the Ohio House Speaker Jason Stevens on Tuesday of this week. That statement comes amid pressure for Ohio lawmakers to amend a state law that sets strict deadlines for certifying presidential candidates for the November ballot. Ohio has a deadline of August 7, a statutory deadline for each political party to certify their presidential candidates to appear on the state's general election ballot on November 5 this year. But the Democratic National Convention, where the party officially settles on a nominee, that is not until August 19, which would mean that in order for Joe Biden to appear on Ohio's ballots, lawmakers would have to amend the law to allow Joe Biden, the presumptive Democratic nominee, to actually be on the ballot. They would have to amend the law, just as they did, by the way, when Republicans did not meet the deadline back in 2012, when Mitt Romney was to be the nominee for the Republican Party, and in 2020, when Donald Trump's Republican convention was also not scheduled until after that Buckeye State deadline. In that case, the Republicans who control the state legislature simply passed a quick and easy legislative fix to allow those candidates to be on the ballot in those presidential years. Now, Ohio is not the only one with such a rule. Alabama has a similar one. Washington State has a similar one that would prevent Joe Biden from appearing on the state's November ballot because of the date of the DNC, the Democratic National Convention, this year. But earlier in May, The Alabama lawmakers simply passed special legislation to allow the president to appear on the state's ballot, regardless of the deadlines. Washington state lawmakers will also allow Biden to appear through a provisional certification, with the party saying, yeah, we believe he will be the nominee. So long as the Democratic Party sends that provisional certification of nomination before the state's August 20 deadline in Washington. Republican lawmakers in Ohio have proposed legislation in the Senate, in the state Senate, back in early May to allow Biden to be on the ballot, but they tacked on unrelated amendments, poison pills, which failed to get enough Democratic votes. The Ohio Speaker, Jason Stevens, told reporters this week that the push to fix the state laws, the state law that's posing a barrier for the Democratic president, had stalled out, even though Republican leaders in both the House and the Senate, where the GOP holds a supermajority, ostensibly have said they wanted to pass something that, according to Cleveland.com, sure, they wanted to, but just somehow they could not do it. There's just not the will to do that from the legislature, Stevens said, the Speaker of the House. Asked to elaborate, he said it's a hyper-political environment at this time of year, and there are some Republicans who just didn't want to vote on it. I think there are other alternatives to it, so why create a stir that's not necessary? That development means that National Democrats will have to pursue one of those alternative paths in order to make sure that Biden's name appears on the ballot in November. The DNC potentially could pursue an administrative fix, which some observers have described as a mini convention that might get around the state law. They could sort of call everyone somehow together and have a mini convention somehow before the real one. Or Democrats could file a lawsuit seeking intervention from the court. Of course, they would be expending time and money and other resources that might be spent on, you know, campaigning to actually win the election this year. Hyperpartisanship and infighting in the Republican legislature among Republicans is what appears to be causing this. That's where the House Speaker Stevens and Republican Senate President Matt Huffman are locked in a leadership battle, and Stevens faces opposition from a significant faction of House GOP members. So it's Republicans fighting amongst Republicans, basically. Asked about all of this, a Biden campaign spokesperson asserted in a statement that Biden will appear on the ballot in all 50 states. That statement did not address how that might happen, specifically in Ohio, however. The Secretary of State, Frank LaRose, in Ohio, a Republican who's the state's top election officials, wrote a letter to Ohio Democratic Party Chair Liz Walter on Tuesday this week, referencing Stevens' comment that they wouldn't be passing a law. He reiterated, the secretary did, that state officials previously rejected a proposal Democrats made to address the issue by requesting what's called a provisional certification of Biden's candidacy, you know, just as they are doing in Washington state without an issue. Quote, with a legislative remedy taken off the table, said LaRose, I must remind you that the deadline is fast approaching and the matter remains unresolved. Unless your party plans to comply with the statutory deadline, I am duty bound to instruct boards of elections to begin preparing ballots that do not include the Democratic Party's nominees for president and vice president of the United States.
And I won't take the basic step that other states take in order to make this thing easily solved.
Well, it is not necessarily, believe me, I'm the last person who want to defend Secretary of State Frank LaRose. But in this case, it's not up to him. There is a law that Republicans passed in the legislature, and they do need to make a change. They need to make a fix, just as they have done in one election after another in previous years when it was Republicans who didn't make the deadline. In a statement, Liz Walter, the head of the state Democrats, said today, Republican politicians at the state house made clear that they want to take away Ohioans' ability to choose who they want to be president. Throughout this process, corrupt politicians in Columbus have politicized the process and used it to play political games with Ohioans' ability to hold their government accountable. Now, just moments before air, just moments before I was just going out of my skin here over this idiocy, over this story that shouldn't even be a story, Ohio's Republican governor, Mike DeWine, made a statement that kind of sounds a whole lot like me. He's mad about this too, or so he says. He said that he is calling a special session of the General Assembly next week to pass legislation ensuring that Biden is on the state's 2024 ballot. Quote, Ohio is running out of time to get Joe Biden, the sitting president of the United States, on the ballot this fall. Failing to do so, he said, is simply unacceptable. This is ridiculous. This is an absurd situation. The Republican governor of Ohio said, of course, when he called that special session for, I believe, to start May 28, he said they should come together to not only pass legislation to get Joe Biden on the ballot, but also to pass the poison pills that are preventing the legislation that would put Biden on the ballot. So we will see how it goes. But in theory, if Democrats do have to file a lawsuit here to simply put the sitting president on the ballot, and if this matter then makes its way up to our stolen, packed, and corrupted U.S. Supreme Court, the high court would immediately rule, of course, that Ohio must put Joe Biden on their ballot, right? Given their ruling just weeks ago in the 14th Amendment case, when they made clear that no single state was allowed to keep a candidate off of the ballot, at least a major party candidate, even in the event where that candidate has clearly violated the Constitution's insurrectionist disqualification clause, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. Even in a case like that, Colorado and Maine, they can't keep Donald Trump off the ballot, even though it would be unconstitutional to put him on. That high court said he must be on. I'm sure they'll do the same here if the Ohio case makes its way up there, right? Where a candidate, in this case, Joe Biden, has violated nothing. Though its party has violated a pretty much random deadline. That's what he's being kept off the ballot for. So the Supreme Court would absolutely reject that idea, and they would order the candidate's name to be placed onto the ballot, right? Well, if we lived in a normal world where our Supreme Court had not been stolen and packed and corrupted by right-wing activist jurists, well, then there would be no question about that. But as I have been arguing for years now about our corrupted right-wing court, and many others are finally beginning to understand that, well, all bets are off at this point as to what this court would do if this case ever reached them. Yet another ruling today by the corrupted court in yet another election-related case, which would have been a no-brainer in years past, sort of illustrates my point, I think, again today. And it was, once again, it was written by one of the court's farthest right, most corrupt justices, although that's getting to be a pretty tough call at this point as to which one is the most corrupt. Samuel Alito wrote this opinion. You may have heard about him in the news recently and other matters in recent days regarding his fondness for violating the U.S. Judicial Court's code of ethics by flying an upside-down American flag outside of his house, a Stop the Steal symbol that was flown over his house just days after the January 6, 2021 insurrection in apparent support of the failed coup by Donald Trump and his Republican supporters, which Alito is apparently one of. He's one of those supporters. And if we all didn't get that message when the New York Times broke that story last week, well, they broke yet another one on another such flag flying over yet another house of Sam Alito on Wednesday night. But we'll get to that in a moment, because on Thursday, the corrupt insurrectionist supporting Sam Alito was busy leading the court through yet another decision to undermine voting by racial minorities. As the majority author of yet another corrupt SCOTUS ruling that puts its thumb on the scale in favor of Republicans in elections. The Supreme Court cleared the way on Thursday for South Carolina to keep using a congressional map that a lower court had deemed to be an unconstitutional racial gerrymander that resulted in the, quote, bleaching of African-American voters from a district. That's what the lower court ruled. But the corrupted Republican majority on the Supreme Court, in a 6-3 vote, returned the case to the lower court, handing a victory to Republicans by allowing them to maintain the boundaries that helped make the district in question a party stronghold. In dissent, liberal justices warned that the court was insulating states from claims of unconstitutional racial gerrymandering. But really, who cares about that? On Thursday, the court held that South Carolina's Republican-controlled legislature did nothing wrong during redistricting when it strengthened Congresswoman Nancy Mace's hold on a coastal congressional district by moving 30,000 Democratic-leaning black residents of Charleston out of her district. Now, when Mace first won election back in 2020 under the state's previous House district maps, she beat the Democratic incumbent, Congressman Joe Cunningham, by 1 percentage point, under 5,400 votes. In 2022, however, after they had redistricted the state following the 2020 census, Mace ended up winning re-election by 14 percentage points. That's how this works.
Mission accomplished.
Quote, "I'm very disturbed about the outcome," said Taiwan Scott, a black voter who sued over the redistricting. Quote, "It's as if we don't matter, but we do matter, and our voices deserve to be heard," he said. Yeah, well, sorry, Mr. Scott. To Sam Alito and friends, you actually really don't matter. The state argued that partisan politics, not race, explains the new congressional map. Moving voters based on their politics is apparently okay, according to the Supreme Court, in recent years. Or at least if it's not okay, they've decided it's not up to the federal courts to decide. It's a matter for the states, not federal courts. As far as they're concerned, states can use partisan politics to gerrymander districts as much as they like, even to ensure that the opposing party can never regain power, in order to, you know, change those maps to make them fair again. Nice, corrupt, anti-small D Democratic and capital D Democratic work, if you can get it. A lower court had ordered the state to redraw the district after it found that the state had used race as a proxy for partisan affiliation in violation of the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment to the Constitution. Ah, the 14th Amendment again. Remember, the Supreme Court apparently now picks and chooses which parts of the 14th Amendment actually matter, actually still count, are actually, you know, still in play, and which ones can simply be ignored because, yeah, the Supreme Court itself has now been gerrymandered. Justice Alito, writing for the court, criticized lower court judges for their, quote, misguided approach that refused to presume that lawmakers acted in good faith, and they gave too much credit to the challengers. Rick Hassan, an election expert at the at UCLA Law School, writing in a blog post today, said that the decision, quote, makes it easier for Republican states to engage in redistricting to help white Republicans maximize their political power. All they have to do is say it's partisan. It's a partisan gerrymander. That's allowed. It's not a racial gerrymander. Apparently, that's all you need to do, and you will do just fine under this corrupted Republican Supreme Court. Janai Nelson, the president and director of the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund, said in a statement, quote, "The highest court in our land greenlit racial discrimination in South Carolina's redistricting process, denied black voters the right to be free from the race-based sorting, and sent a message that facts, process, and precedent will not protect the black vote." Back in 2019, the Supreme Court ruled that partisan gerrymandering cases could not be brought in federal courts anymore. Justice Clarence Thomas at the time, who was part of the right-wing majority 5 years ago, wrote separately on Thursday to say the federal courts should similarly get out of the business of refereeing racial gerrymanders as well. Quote, "It is well past time for the court to return these political issues where they belong, to the political branches," Thomas wrote. The good news, no other justice signed on to that part of Thomas's concurring opinion. But, you know, just give it a few months. Alito, as Justice Elena Kagan described in her dissent, cherry-picked evidence that was brought at trial to reverse engineer a conclusion that the map was really drawn to give Republicans a partisan advantage, not to disempower black voters. Such a distinction means little in a region where race and partisan lean are often closely aligned, notes Kate Riga at Talking Points Memo today. The effect of the decision will be to make it even harder to win racial gerrymandering claims in the future, though Riga observes Alito throughout his opinion expresses more concern about the feelings of South Carolina legislators than he does about their role in disenfranchising their own voters.
Are you really surprised, though?
Quote, "When a federal court finds that race drove a legislature's districting decisions, it is declaring that the legislature engaged in offensive and demeaning conduct that bears an uncomfortable resemblance to political apartheid," he wrote. "We should not be quick to hurl such accusations at the political branches. Don't hurt their feelings with these charges of racial gerrymandering. It's offensive and demeaning. That's the real problem here, according to Justice Alito. Disenfranchising tens of thousands of voters? Well, that's better than suggesting that Southern Republican lawmakers might be racist or something." In her dissent, Kagan hammered Alito for appointing himself as an additional attorney to help South Carolina's case. Quote, "Such micromanagement of plaintiff's case is elsewhere unheard of in constitutional litigation," she wrote. Well, maybe it used to be unheard of, but we're hearing plenty of it now, aren't we? That micromanagement carried into Alito's assessment of the facts, Kagan wrote, leading him to greenlight those facts that favored the state's arguments and to dismiss those facts that inconveniently did not. She said this court is not supposed to be so fearful of telling discriminators, including states, to stop discriminating. She ended her dissent with a look to the future, where states simply have to raise the, quote, "possibility that they drew their gerrymanders with criteria other than race in mind in order to get off scot-free." No, really, it's just partisan politics. It's not race. It's just partisan politics, as if that is okay, because the high court, yes, has now made it so. It's official. It's not racism. It's just partisan politics. Apparently, racism is okay as well, as long as you can just call it partisan politics. Quote, "When racial classifications in voting are at issue, the majority says every doubt must be resolved in favor of the state, lest heaven forfend," and by the way, that's Kagan's snark, not mine, "heaven forfend the state be accused of," quote, "offensive and demeaning conduct." So, is it offensive and demeaning to hang an upside-down American flag outside of one's house in support of an attempted coup to overthrow the American government just days after such a coup? How about when you are a member of the U.S. Supreme Court who does that? I don't know about you, but I find it quite offensive. I am offended. Particularly when other judges appointed to lifetime positions on the federal court, all the other judges other than those who sit on the Supreme Court would have been in strict violation of the U.S. Judicial Code of Ethics that bars public political activity by a judge or the expression of political viewpoints like that. But those rules apply to every judge other than the ones that sit on the highest court in the land. Why? Well, because those are the judges who determine the rules for everyone else. And they determine that those rules do not apply to them. Is there something in the Constitution that mandates that? Of course not. That's just the way that the Supreme Court, led by Chief Justice John Roberts, that's just the way these people have decided to roll. On Wednesday night, you might have heard in yet another gobsmacking revelation from the New York Times that last summer, 2 years after the upside-down American flag was flown outside of the Virginia home of Sam Alito, another provocative symbol was displayed at his vacation home in New Jersey. According to interviews with half a dozen neighbors and passersby and photographs, including one, by the way, that is available on Google Street View if you'd like to check it for yourself. This time, the flag in question was the Appeal to Heaven flag, which, like the inverted U.S. flag, was carried by rioters at the Capitol on January 6, 2021. It's also known as the Pine Tree flag. It dates back to the Revolutionary War, but it sort of fell into obscurity until recent years. And it is now a symbol of support for, yes, President Donald Trump, as well as for a religious strand of the Stop the Steal campaign and for a push to remake American government in Christian terms. Yes, that's the flag. That's the flag that a justice on the Supreme Court is flying. A Christian nationalist flag over his vacation home in support of Donald Trump. And unlike the upside down flag that he blamed his wife for, well, he didn't even bother to offer an explanation to the New York Times on this one, on this second clear violation of the U.S. Judicial Code of Ethics, which, as you know, does not apply to him. So who really cares? During the period that the Appeal to Heaven flag was seen flying at the justice's New Jersey house, according to the Times, a key January 6 case arrived at the Supreme Court, challenging whether those who stormed the Capitol could be prosecuted for obstruction. The court's ruling on that case is due at any time now. There is no sign that Justice Alito or Justice Clarence Thomas, whose wife participated in the insurrection, no sign that either of them have recused from either that case or the other related case, also pending from the same court that has helped Donald Trump's federal criminal trial related to trying to steal the 2020 election via, among other things, inciting that attack at the U.S. Capitol, where both upside-down American flags and the Appeal to Heaven flag were carried by the Trump insurrectionists. There is no sign that either Alito or Thomas plan to recuse themselves from either of those cases. In coming weeks, the justices will rule on both of them, which could scuttle some or all of the charges against Donald Trump. Judges, the Times notes, are not supposed to give any impression of bias, yet the flag could be seen as telegraphing the Alito's views, and at a time when the justices were on the cusp of adopting a new ethics code, one which, by the way, will be optional as well for the justices and cannot be enforced by anyone other than the justices themselves against themselves. How do you think that is going to work out? Also, how do you think Republicans would react if, say, one of the liberal justices, let's just say Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, because she's black, and I'm hoping someone out there will find my comparison to be, quote, offensive and demeaning. How do you think the Republicans would react in Congress if Justice Jackson flew a Joe Biden Dark Brandon flag outside of her home? You suppose we would hear some outrage from Republicans about that in Congress? You suppose they would be announcing investigations over it, that they would be holding hearings, that they would be demanding that she recuse herself from any rulings related to the Biden administration? Of course they would. Do you suppose they would issue subpoenas? And then when the subpoenas were ignored, because apparently Supreme Court justices are allowed to ignore subpoenas from Congress, well, then those Republicans would move to impeach Justice Jackson for violations of the U.S. Judicial Code of Conduct, whether it officially applied to her or not. Do you suppose they would do that? Of course they would. And so what are Democrats doing about any of this? In response to what we have now learned about Justice Alito, or for that matter, what we had already learned about him and about Clarence Thomas and about Neil Gorsuch and about John Roberts, and all of the millions of dollars and favors and luxury vacations and cash that they have received from right-wing millionaires and billionaires who have business before the court? What are the Democrats doing about any of that? Well, not much. Some have now called for Alito to recuse himself from the two rulings related to the insurrection, but he won't. Clarence Thomas didn't, despite his wife being a participant in the insurrection. So why should Sammy recuse himself for flying a few insurrectionist flags? It took a few days, and I guess that's second story from the New York Times, but Senator Dick Durbin, the low-energy Democratic chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, which is, at least for a few more months, actually controlled by a Democratic majority, Dick Durbin finally got around to issuing a statement about all of this. Take your time, Dick. U.S. Senate Majority Whip Dick Durbin, chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, released the following statement after a New York Times report that an Appeal to Heaven flag, a symbol carried on January 6, was flown at Supreme Court Justice Sam Alito's vacation home. Quote, "This incident is yet another example of apparent ethical misconduct by a sitting justice, and it adds to the court's ongoing ethical crisis. For the good of our country and the court, Justice Alito must recuse himself immediately from cases related to the 2020 election and the January 6 insurrection, and the Chief Justice must see how this is damaging the court and immediately enact an enforceable code of conduct. This episode will further erode public faith in the court," says Durbin. "The Senate Judiciary Committee has been investigating the ethical crisis at the court for more than a year, and that investigation continues." Really, does it? Who knew? And he adds, "We remain focused on ensuring the Supreme Court adopts an enforceable code of conduct, which we can do by passing the Supreme Court Ethics Recusal and Transparency Act." Okay, good. Please do that, sir. Democrats control the Senate. Why haven't they passed it already? According to Durbin's statement, the bill would require Supreme Court justices to adopt a binding code of conduct, create a mechanism to investigate alleged violations of the code of conduct and other laws, improve disclosure and transparency when a justice has a connection to a party or amicus before the court, and requires justice to explain their recusal decisions to the public. So why haven't they passed that? Well, you know why they haven't passed it, because Republicans will filibuster it. Because Republicans are the corrupt enough that they allowed this situation to happen in the first place. So guess what? Put it up for a vote. Let them filibuster it. Let the American public know what Democrats will do if they control the U.S. Senate. By the way, if they could, well, they could get rid of the filibuster and they could pass this with just a simple minority, a simple majority.
Yeah, but Manchin won't let them.
But they could try. Manchin,
they could be caught trying.
Manchin is leaving the Senate at the end of this year. Now, whether at the end of this session, now whether Democrats still control the Senate next year remains to be seen. But this is how you legislate. You put things up for a vote. You let people see who's voting for what, and you say, hey, give us more supporters of our party, and we will get this done the next time. So Durbin says that he has been calling on the Supreme Court to adopt an enforceable code of conduct for more than a decade. He first sent a letter to the Chief Justice on this issue more than 12 years ago. Cool, 12 years ago. What have you done since? Since he has flatly ignored you in all of those years, Dick. So does this mean that we will have an investigation now? He's put out this outrage statement. So will we have an investigation of Alito now? Does it mean the Democrats will actually take some sort of action if and when Alito does not recuse himself from the upcoming decisions? Don't hold your breath for that, for either the recusal or the investigation. Now, you know, I know there's likely Democrats out there saying, well, even if Democrats did take action in the Senate to investigate, subpoena, call Alito or his wife or their neighbors into the Senate Judiciary Committee for testimony, and even if they did pass legislation to hold this runaway, corrupt, far-right U.S. Supreme Court accountable, that, well, they couldn't get it passed in the GOP-controlled House. That is true, but that is how politics and legislation works. Make it happen in the Senate. Do whatever you can and then run on getting it passed into law in the next Congress. If the American people give you majorities in both the Senate and the House and Democrats hold on to the White House, that is politics. That's how it's supposed to work. That's how things are supposed to get done. As New York's Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is currently in the minority in the U.S. House, as she made clear when discussing this issue last night on Chris Hayes' program.
Samuel Alito has identified himself with the same people who raided the Capitol on January 6th and is now going to be presiding over court cases that have deep implications over the participants of that rally. And while this is the threat to our democracy, Democrats have a responsibility for defending our democracy. And in the Senate, we have gavels. There should be subpoenas going out. There should be active investigations that are happening. And I believe that when House Democrats take the majority, we are preparing and ensuring to support the broader effort to stand up our democracy. But I also believe that when Democrats have power, we have to use it. We cannot be in perpetual campaign mode. We need to be in governance mode. We need to be in accountability mode with every lever that we have. Because we cannot take a Senate majority for granted, a House majority for granted, or a White House for granted. Every single minute matters, and we have to use our power when we have it.
Yes, please. And you could hear her say that, you know, they have gavels over there in the Senate. She's trying to be nice, but she's trying to say, yeah, Senate, get to work, because we're getting to work over here in the House to do whatever we can if and when we return to the majority. But you guys over there in the Senate, what are you doing? Alito's behavior is an outrage. But so is Clarence Thomas's and John Roberts and all the rest. We know that. So what are Democrats going to do about it? How about let's start with anything? Anything. That would be good. All right. Let's take a quick break. I'll calm down and we'll get to some slightly better news, maybe, on accountability for at least some of the 2020 election deniers, in this case, at another right-wing media outlet. And maybe some other stuff if we have time before Desi Doyen joins us for our latest Green News Report, which might get me worked up all over again. I'm Brad Friedman. You're listening to The Bradcast.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Bradcast. Welcome back to The Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Here's an attempt at some actual accountability, though if you followed my work here at the Bradcast and at bradblog.com over the years, you know how absolutely crazy it makes me. I have to take the side of voting machine companies in this matter.
True.
Oh, I hate that, Des. Anyway, that's how upside down our world, I guess, has now become. The voting system vendor Smartmatic alleges that the far-right political propaganda outlet known as Newsmax has destroyed evidence in the voting machine company's lawsuit against it over the right-wing outlet's false claim that Smartmatic helped, quote, rig the 2020 election. That, according to court documents made public this week. Lawyers for Smartmatic allege that Newsmax engaged in a, quote, cover-up, oops, by destroying texts and emails of key executives that would demonstrate the network's knowledge that fraud claims being pushed by former President Trump and his allies were untrue. According to NBC News, Smartmatic says the deletions occurred after Newsmax had received notice to preserve evidence for the pending lawsuit. Newsmax said it, quote, categorically denies the allegations, but the new filing refers to specific text messages in which Newsmax CEO Chris Ruddy referred to Trump's attorney, Sidney Powell, which Smartmatic says were deleted from Ruddy's devices, but were saved by other witnesses and provided to the plaintiffs during discovery. Oopsie daisy. Powell was a Newsmax guest and a source of false allegations about voting fraud in by Smartmatic and other companies. The filing also alleges that the company lied under oath about the existence of its own journalistic guidelines. How so? By saying they have journalistic guidelines? At Newsmax, the lawsuit is one of many major defamation cases filed by Smartmatic and another company you may have heard of, Dominion Voting Systems, against right-wing so-called news organizations over false claims about fraud in the 2020 election. Most are still pending, and several may go to trial beginning this fall. The potential payments in damages to the plaintiffs are substantial. In 2023, for example, just moments before opening statements in a Delaware courtroom, Fox News paid the voting machine company Dominion a settlement of $787.5 million over similar false claims that it made on air. Smartmatic is suing Newsmax for defamation in the very same court that handled the Fox Dominion case for unspecified damages. And by the way, I don't think they have $787.5 million over there at Newsmax. So we'll see how this goes. But the company has alleged that Newsmax promoted claims that it knew to be false because it attracted viewers and was therefore profitable. Newsmax denies the allegations. The case is scheduled to go to trial in September. And of course, I find all of this delightful, to be frank, because the only reason that Sidney Powell and the others went after Smartmatic in the first place, Smartmatic has only one contract for voting systems in the U.S., and that is here in Los Angeles, where they didn't bother to say, oh, you know, Los Angeles was stolen for Joe Biden. But they made all of these claims about Smartmatic all over the country. And the only reason they did that is because of my exclusive reporting at bradblog.com more than 15 years ago.
Oh, goodness.
About Smartmatic's then relationship with Dominion, reporting that Sidney Powell and the others subsequently bastardized to make her claims about both of those companies in 2020. More than 10 years later, the arguments related to Venezuela and Hugo Chavez, etc., even though Chavez died years ago, all came from my reporting that Sidney Powell linked to at the time, and I loved it. I thought it was hilarious. So every time I hear one of these right-wingers discussing Venezuela and Chavez and Smartmatic in relation to the 2020 election, in which Smartmatic really had nothing to do with it other than out here in Los Angeles, well, I actually sometimes say out loud, you're welcome, and I find it hilarious.
Yes.
You can testify to that.
I can.
In a statement, Smartmatic attorney J. Eric Connolly said Newsmax's misconduct goes beyond falsely accusing Smartmatic of rigging the U.S. election. It also attempted to conceal evidence of its actions and failed to follow its own journalistic standards. Newsmax has journalistic standards. Connolly said Smartmatic's motion details numerous instances of evidence destruction, including incriminating emails and texts from Newsmax executives indicating intentional spoliation, which means they meant to destroy these documents on purpose.
It was not an accident.
Smartmatic is also suing Fox News over similar claims for $2.7 billion in damages. That trial is expected to start early next year. Fox has denied those allegations. Of course, they also denied the Dominion allegations until they settled with Dominion for $787.5 million to make it all go away. In April, Smartmatic settled a suit against OAN, One American News Network, another right-wing channel that allowed false election fraud claims on its air, though the terms of that settlement are sealed, and Dominion still has pending suits against OAN and Newsmax themselves. Both companies have filed suit also against Sidney Powell, Rudy Giuliani, and MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell. And let's see, do we have time? Yeah, one more. I got some brighter news here before we get to the Green News Report to ruin it all. and before we head off for our Memorial Day holiday break next week, President Joe Biden announced a new round of federal student debt forgiveness on Wednesday that his administration said will provide relief to 160,000 borrowers. The Education Department said it's canceling $7.7 billion for certain borrowers who received public service loan forgiveness, like teachers and nurses and law enforcement officials. Many of them were promised that forgiveness years ago but never received it. The debt relief also applies to some borrowers who signed up for the new income-driven repayment plan known as SAVE. Also, borrowers who are receiving relief because of other adjustments to similar programs. The latest announcement comes after a broader effort to reduce student debt was blocked by the corrupted U.S. Supreme Court, which had previously allowed the Trump administration to make adjustments to student loans, student debts, under the very same law that they blocked Joe Biden from using. See what I mean about corruption of this court? That plan that was stopped by the Supreme Court after it was put in place by Biden would have erased up to $20,000 in student debt for about 43 million borrowers. But, you know, that's what you get when you got a right-wing court. When you elect Republican presidents and a Republican-controlled Senate willing to block Democratic presidents from appointing justices to that same court. In any event, by now, the total number of people who have benefited from debt cancellation is about almost 5 million, according to the Education Department, which has now approved $167 billion in loan forgiveness, which means that money can now be invested into the economy by those folks. Folks can purchase homes and cars and send their kids to school, etc. In other words, loan forgiveness of this type benefits everyone. Nonetheless, this is how Fox News pushed it out to smartphone users on Wednesday with an alert. Quote, Biden administration adds $7.7 billion to the taxpayer tab with new student debt handout. And then almost two hours later, again, just in case people missed it, I guess, on the West Coast, because it came in the middle of the morning. Breaking news. Biden admin spends $7.7 billion in latest round of student debt handouts. Those are handouts, and they're going to increase the taxpayer tab. But that's weird because they never describe the trillions of dollars given to corporations and millionaires and billionaires via Trump's Republican tax cuts. Never describe those as handouts. I wonder why. Even though most of those gifts to wealthy people added to the taxpayer tab means that, well, those folks are just going to keep it in savings and the stock market without actually boosting the economy at all, unlike student loan borrowers being forgiven, who will pay off their bills, will buy things, will actually improve the economy. But Fox News, of course, and all the suckers and chumps that follow it, it's a taxpayer handout. Oh, we're in trouble. Quick break, and we're back with more trouble with Desi Doyen and our latest Green News Report. That's straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is serving you. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you.
You're listening to an encore presentation of The Bradcast.
All right, Des, I've already worked myself into a lather in this program. I guess it's your turn in our latest Green News Report.
This is a search and rescue mission, and it will continue to be throughout the day.
Extreme weather unleashes disasters from Iowa to Mexico. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signs Don't Say Climate Change law. Plus, study finds microplastics in human testicles.
Wait, what?
Microplastics in human testicles.
Yeah, I heard you. All of those stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The entire world is looking to Florida to lead in climate change.
Uh-oh. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desiree, it's getting really bad out there.
Yes, it is a severe weather spring across the U.S. with multiple rounds of extreme storms and a much higher than average number of tornado outbreaks. Iowa State Police confirm multiple people were killed by tornadoes that tore through the state on Tuesday and destroyed part of the town of Greenfield. More severe weather is in the forecast. Houston, Texas is still recovering from an astonishingly powerful derecho storm last week that shredded glass from skyscrapers. 100,000 people still without electricity as a dangerous high humidity heat wave sets in.
What's a derecho?
A derecho is a very severe storm with straight line winds that can run 100 miles or more. Man-made climate change driven by the burning of fossil fuels has increased the frequency and intensity of severe storms. No matter where you live, now is a great time to check that your household is prepared for extreme weather.
There was at one point 18 different tornadoes in Iowa the other
day. Meteorologists say the extreme storms and heat in the U.S. are tied to a massive, relentless heat dome that has parked over Mexico. The persistent heat dome and drought are also linked to climate change and combined have pushed Mexico City into a water shortage emergency. Mexico's heat is so intense that howler monkeys are falling dead from the trees.
Oh, man.
Meanwhile, Florida is sweltering under a record early season heat wave with heat indexes running 115 to 118 degrees Fahrenheit, and it's only May. That, plus ongoing record heat in the Atlantic Ocean, is an ominous sign for hurricane season, which officially starts June 1st. But don't say it's climate change. Florida's Republican Governor Ron DeSantis has signed a controversial bill that deletes all references to climate change from state statutes. It also bans offshore offshore wind power, halts programs supporting energy efficiency and renewable energy, and boosts fossil fuel use.
Unbelievable.
The law ignores that Florida is incredibly vulnerable to climate impacts. The state is spending millions of dollars every year to deal with rising sea levels, extreme hurricanes, and skyrocketing insurance rates. Miami TV meteorologist Steve McLaughlin bravely criticized the new law on air.
In spite of the fact that the state of Florida over the last couple of years has seen record heat, record flooding, record rain, record insurance rates, and the corals are dying all around the state. Please keep in mind, the most powerful climate change solution is the one you already have in the palm of your hands, the right to vote. And we will never tell you who to vote for, but we will tell you this. We implore you to please do your research and know that there are candidates that believe in climate change and that there are solutions, and there are candidates that don't.
Thank you, Steve McLaughlin.
In disturbing news, tiny microplastic pollution has been found in the human bloodstream, brain, organs, placenta, and now human testicles. A small study of both human and dog testes found microplastics in all samples. Based on animal studies that show exposure to microplastics reduces fertility, the researchers say they suspect that the presence of microplastics in humans may be contributing to the well-documented decline in human sperm quality and male fertility around the world.
Well, that explains that.
Sperm counts in Western men have declined more than 50% over the last few decades. That's been previously linked to air pollution and pesticide exposure.
All right, knock it off.
Finally, some better news.
Thank you.
At least for school children, a school district in Oakland, California is the first in the nation to transition to a 100% electric school bus fleet. The all-electric buses are emissions-free and eliminate diesel air pollution that harms children's lungs. And the bus's batteries can play a critical dual role as a virtual power plant, pushing electricity back to the grid when needed.
That is very cool. That said, I'm sort of still thinking about that whole testicles thing.
Yeah.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. We are off next week for the holiday week. We will see you thereafter. Until then, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Now that you say it's a little baby, I'll say nuts to you. Really mean it, I'll say nuts to you. What did you say, boy? I'll say nuts to you. Oh, baby, I'll say nuts to you. Oh, nuts.
Well, there you go. On nuts. Thank you very much, Desi Doyen. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. That is made possible by those of you kind enough. Thank you to stop by bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves. And in this case, as you heard the man say, we're going to be off next week. So you're helping us to fill up the Prius tank once or twice for while we're out of here. Drop me email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter, I am The Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
And not fun at my expense, and someday you regret. Oh, baby, now and before, I'm with you. I'll make you sorry and you never will forget. Thought you were a regular fellow, place all my faith in you. Now that you say it's a little baby, I'll say nuts to you. Really mean it, I'll say nuts to you. What did you say, boy? I'll say nuts to you. Oh, baby.
You're listening to The Bradcast. Oh, no. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.